Okay, so the parasha this week is Parasha Shoftim. And the second Aliyah, which we're doing this year, really is, it contains just one topic and one topic only. So it's a lot easier to find the topic in the second Aliyah, because there's only one topic. And the topic of the second Aliyah is the mitzvah, the obligation to appoint a king, a melech. So the pasuk says, this is found in Perek Yud Zayin, Pasuk Yud Dalad, Ki Sava al Haaretz, when you come to the land of Eretz Yisrael, Hashem Elokech Nosin Lach, that Hashem, your God, is giving, granting to you the Rishta and the Yeshavtaba, and you take possession of it, you dwell in it, the Omarta, and you will say, Asima Olai Melech, I shall place upon me a king. Like all the nations that surround me. Indeed, the Pasuk says, Som Tosim Alecha Melech, indeed you shall place upon you a king. Asha Yivcha Hashem Elokecha Bo Mikerev Achecha, that Hashem, your God, shall choose for as him from amidst your brethren. Tosim Alecha Melech, you shall place upon you a king. You could not put upon you a foreign king, a foreign person, who is not from your brethren, that you can't do. But you have to appoint a king. And then the pasuk goes on and gives certain rules about this king. He can't increase for himself horses. To bring the people back to Mitzrayim. In order to have more horses, etc., etc. And also, he shouldn't increase wives, can't have many wives, also not to have silver, too much silver and gold. And these are the rules. We'll come back to some of those afterwards. But the mitzvah itself of appointing a king, So the Ramban right away discusses just the language, the syntax of the pasuk, because the way the pasuk presents this mitzvah of appointing a king, it phrases it and frames it by this preface of Ve'omarta Asima Olai Melech, and you'll say, when you come to the land of Israel, and you'll say, I shall place upon me a king, it's as though it's saying, if you'll say, I shall appoint a king upon me, and we want to have a king, then this is what you have to do. Which also almost makes it look like it's conditional. It's conditional on whether or not the person, the people, want to have a king. And yet, at the same time, the Ramban says, that it really is a mitzvah asay. It's a mitzvah asay. Dereis is one of the 613 mitzvahs. Sefer Achinuch counts it, number 497. It's a positive commandment, despite the fact that it phrases it in this way. So the Ramban says, what it really means is, you shall say. You shall say that we want a king. It's a commandment. You have to say this. It's something you have to say. But he's still bothered by this, you know, phraseology. So what he says, the Ramban says, it's actually alluding to a future event of history. And I mentioned at the beginning, a reminder of our Wednesday night class, you know, on Sefer Shmuel. But this is now a double opportunity to remind ourselves again, because this pasuk actually is the backdrop for the whole story of Sefer Shmuel, the first book of Shmuel, and about the appointment of King Shaul as being the king, and all the stories which ensue there afterwards. But we know those who come to that class are aware of the fact that that Shaul was not the ideal king. He wasn't the ideal, and there was this ongoing conflict between Shaul and David was going to become the ideal king because David is from the Shevet Yehuda, etc. But Shaul is not the ideal king. And even in the actual request for the king then, it wasn't looked at as being a favorable thing. When the Jewish people asked for a king back then, it wasn't favorable. The pasuk says there in Sefer Shmuel, in Perek Dalad, it says that when they asked for a king, it wasn't good in Shmuel's, it was wrong in Shmuel's eyes, and they said, when they said, give us a king to judge us. And Shmuel, it was considered to be a negative request that they had. And then at the next pasuk says, Hashem said to Shmuel, don't worry. He says, listen to the voice of the people and what they say to do. You should give them a king anyway, and you should realize they haven't rejected you. It's not a rejection of you, even though Shmuel was the prophet in a certain sense. He was the judge. He was, so to speak, the king before kings arose apart for the Jewish people. He was the shofet. He was the judge. But Hashem assured him and said, don't worry. This is not an affront to you. This is really an affront to me. But the way the whole story presents itself is as though that it was considered a very, very far from the ideal. It wasn't an ideal request. Hashem said, don't worry, it's not a rejection of you, it's a rejection of me. So their request for a king was considered to be negative. It was a negative thing that they asked for a king. And the question is, if the Ramban and the Sefer Chinuch and the way that the Pasuk seems to read, it's a positive commandment. So then what's going on? Why was it considered negative for them? And yet it's a mitzvah, it's a positive mitzvah to appoint a king. So the answer is, famous discussion, but several answers are given. The Rambam says, the reason why it was, it's a mitzvah to have a king, right? But it was considered negative for the Jewish people because the Rambam says, he's ma'achas shakomis melech mitzvah. If the appointment of a king is considered a mitzvah, asei deraisa, so lama leratza kadosh baruch hu. So why is it that Hashem didn't want it? Kishishon melech mishmul, when they asked the king from Shmuel, and the answer is lefi shishol b'tarumas, because they requested the king with a grievance, with a complaint against Shmuel. The motivation, the backdrop of their request was not ideal. V'lo sha'alu l'kayim a mitzvah, they didn't ask for a king in order to fulfill a mitzvah. Ela mipnei shekotzu b'Shmuel, rather because they had a certain negative feelings towards Shmuel Hanavi, as the Pasuk says. So the context of their request for the king was not right. It was very unideal, and that was the fault. But it's a mitzvah. So the Ramban says this, this is what the Pasuk is alluding. The Pasuk is actually alluding to this kind of non-ideal way that they ask for the king, because it phrases the mitzvah, the actual commandment, in the context of, and if you'll say, I'll ask for a king, we want a king, like the other nations around us, because I forgot to mention, that's another explanation given by the other Mephoroshim. That's another reason why it wasn't ideal, their request for the king, because they didn't want to have it, because they wanted a king, not like a Jewish king, but they wanted a king like the nations around them. What's the nations around them kind of king? What do the nations around them have a king for? As a military leader, as a political leader. But the role of a Jewish king, the role of a Jewish melech, is to be a spiritual leader. Rav Samson Rafael Hirsch says that the role of a Jewish king, the main function of the Jewish king, is not as a warrior. Granted, in times of war, the king must mobilize the nation and serve as its commander-in-chief, but the primary purpose of his appointment is to fight spiritual battles and champion Torah values. The king is entrusted with the all-important role of securing Jewish life by upholding and enforcing a rulership greater than his own, the rule of the kingdom of heaven. For such a role, the character and righteousness of the individual are not secondary. Rather, they lie at the heart of his role as the Jewish monarch. So the ideal context and motivation for appointing and requesting a king is we want a tremendous spiritual leader to lead us and to champion for the Torah and for mitzvahs and to give us spirituality, to be that type of leader. So that's another explanation, the commentaries say, the reason that why it was considered a fault on the part of the Jewish people when they requested a king from Shmuel, because they weren't looking for a king like that. Again, looking for more like a military leader, a political leader, and the like, things like that, non-ideal. And again, the Ramban says that that's what the Pasuk, our Pasuk, the very Pasuk which presents the very commandment of appointing a king, alludes to that future episode of the inappropriate request of a king from Shmuel. By phrasing it, it's an interesting thing. I don't know, really understand this, but the Ramban says that the Pasuk, finds it necessary, right, to allude to the inappropriate request of a king from Shmuel by phrasing the commandment of appointing a king with the backdrop of, and if you'll say, we want a king like the nations around us. It's a direct remez, a direct allusion to that episode of Shaul. So it's really interesting that it's embedding that story inside this pasuk over here, right? But it's a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah asei deraisa. It's a positive commandment to appoint a king. Of course, the ultimate king, when I say the ultimate king, we've not had kings for centuries and centuries and centuries. However, there'll be a king eventually. That's what you say, melech ha-mashiach. The idea of the mashiach is to be a melech. The concept of mashiach is this pasuk over here, Som Tosim Alecha Melech. Now, what it entails practically and how the Mashiach will be revealed and the process and everything, not getting into that today. But the source of Mashiach is this pasuk. You know, people think that Mashiach is some kind of magical, mystical, supernatural being. No, he's a melech. He's the melech. Melech HaMashiach. The anointed melech, because a king gets anointed. So he gets a, this is the source for the concept of Mashiach. So when that comes, that will come. When Mashiach comes, there'll be a melech once again. But it's, again, important to realize that he was the role of the melech was to lead the people spiritually, like Rosham Shulchan Hashas says, to lead the people spiritually and to give them the direction and the purpose of who they are. That's one understanding, actually. Another commentary, sort of Simcha Zisel Broider, says that another idea of the melech for the Jewish people is also to give us a picture and a feeling of Malchus Shemayim, because the Malchus on earth is a reflection on the Malchus in Shemayim. Very hard to relate to the concept of Malchus Shemayim. I come to Rosh Hashanah and Hashem is the king. What does it mean to have a king? And, you know, we've discussed before that people who have lived, you know, in England and, you know, the Commonwealth, the concept of the monarch and the monarchy kind of gives people more of a feeling of authority and leadership in that very, very elevated way. But that's the concept. One of the ideas of having a melech for Klal Yisrael is the concept of having a picture and a feeling of Malchus Shemayim in our lives. He says that this is also the reason why Malchus is something which is passed on through Yerusha, through inheritance. Every time a melech, if a king passes away, they're not re-elected and re-chosen by someone else. It always goes through Yerusha, and that's what can also cause challenges, because who says the next child, the next melech is going to be the best melech? And the Jewish people experience problems and challenges like that, as the Sefer Melachim speaks about. But the concept of the reason why Malchus goes through and passes on by Yerusha, because once the melech is established, once the king was established, then in order to reflect that same idea of Malchus Shemayim being eternal and forever and unswerving, that it's paralleled by the fact that the melech on earth is forever, forever. So it gives us that picture and that feeling of that same idea. Malchus Shemayim is forever, is for all of eternity. So having a melech gives us that picture, gives us that feeling, gives us that connection, the visceral. It's like also a little bit like, you know, Kibud Av Ve'Em, you know, why Kibud Av, the mitzvah of honoring parents, is on the first side of the Luchos, together with the other mitzvahs between man and Hashem, because honoring and revering parents, it also gives us a more of a tangible experience of revering and honoring Hashem. Because we have physical people in this world who we have honor for, we have respect for. It gives us that spirit, that gives us that spirit within ourselves of revering and having respect for another being, a higher entity, Hashem. But that's the idea of having a melech. So again, you know, we don't have a melech today. It's, you know, mitz Hashem, there should be the coming of the Mashiach very quickly in our days. But before that happens, you know, is there any lesson, is there any practical, personal message or lesson we can take from this parasha? So the Slonim Rebbe in his Nesiva Shalom, so he writes and he gives us a very inspiring picture and explanation of a practical, more personal take-home lesson of the parish of HaMelech. First of all, there's an expression somewhere in the Gemara, somewhere it says, man Malki Rabbonin. Who are the kings? Who are the true monarchs in the world? The Rabbanan. It refers to the idea that people who live with Torah, people who live with mitzvahs, people who are imbued with Torah, allow Torah to suffuse them and become part of them, they are the malachim, not angels, maybe they're angels too, but they are the malachim, the kings of the world, the kings of society, the kings of civilization. Having Torah inside of you, living a life of Torah, makes you into a melech. If we have Torah part of our life, we're malach, and we are kings. That's a melech. A melech is someone who has the Torah within himself, within herself, and is ruled by the Torah. That's a melech. So with that feeling, with that sense, that a melech is someone who is learning Torah, who is living Torah, so then you could morph or apply the pasuk to all of us. It applies to all of us. It's a lesson for all of us. To become a melech, we should listen to this pasuk. And what does the pasuk say? What is the instructions of a melech? What are the instructions of a melech? The instructions are two categories of instructions. Category one is sur meira, and category two is asay tov. Sur meira is a pasuk in Tehillim, sur meira asay tov, turn away from evil, and asay tov, and perform goodness and do good, negative and positive. And as it applies to here, the pasuk says, what is the turning away from evil that the melech has to engage in? Not too many horses, not too many wives, and not too much silver and gold. These are the three warnings he has. Keep away from all of these excessive engagements. Too many horses, because the more horses you have, and he's going to go back to Mitzrayim to get more horses, the more horses, the more power, right? Horses are power, and in the ancient world, they were the source of power. So the message to the king was, don't get lost in believing in your own power. Always remember that the koach, power, comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So that's the first lesson. Remember, all power, all energy, all success emanates from the Almighty. That's where it comes from. Don't believe or don't trust in all of your forces, whether it be the horses, whether it be the cars, whether it be the military, whether it be anything in the world. That's not where the force and the source of power comes from. Ultimately, it's from Hashem. That's the first message. The second one is, don't increase wives. Not to engage, not to get lost in desire and passion. Second warning, keep away from excessive passion. We spoke about that last week, about eating. I was thinking about this. Don't eat for taiva, eat for tafkid, right? Don't eat for taiva, eat for tafkid. The word taiva means desire. Tafkid means purpose. Don't eat for desire. Eat for purpose, for the sake of being healthy and staying healthy. And so if you missed that class, you can go back to it, listen to it from last week. So that's the second thing. Keep away from taiva, excessive indulgence. Second warning, to become a king. And the third instruction in the first category to become a king is also not increasing silver and gold. Simple. Don't become arrogant. Don't become, it's similar to the first one, not having too much and believing in and having a sense of ego, of power. That I've got all my, I have so much possession. I have so much, I'm powerful because I'm so important, because I've achieved so much. All of these things are the first category of sur meirah, turning away from evil to become a king. And the second category is the asay tov, which is the next pasuk after that, that he has to write that a king has to have pasuk. This is pasuk yud ches, and he has to kosav lo es mishnei haTorah hazos. He has to write for himself this mishnah Torah. It's a proactive commandment. Write this mishnah Torah. Now, mishnah Torah is a little bit ambiguous, because mishnah Torah can refer to sefer Devarim. Because Devarim is also called Mishnah Torah. The word Mishnah means repetition. So it could mean, it could refer to that. It refer to the Sefer Devarim. Mishnah Torah is also the work of the Rambam. It doesn't mean that, because that came in later, obviously. But the Gemara says the word Mishnah also means double. Double, and it refers to two Sifrei Torah. That the king had to write two Sifrei Torah. And the pasuk continues on, it has to be with him, and he has to read in it all the days of his life. Not it, or each one of them, it. Two Sifrei Torah. A king has to have two Sifrei Torah in which he's supposed to read all the days of his life. And as it applies to us, we have to have two Sifrei Torah. We have to all have, we want to become kings in our lives. We want to be a king. We want to be royalty. Mamlechas Kohanim. We want to be kings and queens. We need to have two Sifrei Torah. So after the class, we're going to be doing a fundraiser to raise the funds for, we've got a lot of Sifrei Torah to buy over here, right? Each one of us have to have two. So, but what is it? Like, what does that mean? What does it mean to have two Sifrei Torah? So the Shlomo Rebbe gives two explanations. Very beautiful. That there's two Sifrei Torah that we're all supposed to have. Two Sifrei Torah, meaning conceptually, we're all supposed to have two Sifrei Torah. The first explanation, he says, is there's the private Sefer Torah and there's the public Sefer Torah. Because we all live private lives and public lives. We are by ourselves in our homes, and then we're also out in public. And a Jew has to be a Jew in all circumstances. You know, it's a challenge, the challenge of the Jew, the 3 days a year Jew, or the I'm a Jew at home, not a Jew outside. I'm a Jew outside, not a Jew inside. The whole holistic, comprehensive experience of Judaism is that the Torah governs all aspects of my life. It governs my interactions with other people, my behavior, the Rambam, Hilchos Deos, we did that a few months ago, the laws of personality dispositions, beautiful discussions there and halachas about how to behave and according to halacha in our interaction with other people. That's like the public Sefer Torah, the public Torah in our life, governing how our actions are and our public behavior, our business dealings, our interaction with other people. But the private part of our lives as well. The idea that Hashem is with us every single moment. And in the privacy of our own home, where we tend to think, well, we can just be ourselves. Very, very important. The very beginning of Shulchan Aruch, the Ramah, Moshe Isla says, the very beginning of Shulchan Aruch, he says, Shavisi Hashem lenegdi somid. Hashem, I place Hashem before me constantly. Hu klal gadol b'Torah. This is a major principle in Torah. V'mailas ha-tadikim. And among the qualities and virtues of righteous people, Asher holchim lifnei Elokim, who go before Hashem, ki ein yeshivas adam usne osav vaasakov, because a person sitting in his house and his movements and his dealings vulevada vebeisa, while he's by himself in his house, ki yeshivas usne osav vaasakov who lifnei melech gadol, is not like how he sits and behaves in front of a great king. We behave differently in front of royalty, in front of important people, in front of someone like a king. Our behavior at home is kind of lackadaisical and casual. Lo dibura v'rachavas piv kertzono, a person's speech and how he uses his mouth according to his wishes and desires, v'hu im anosho anshe besa, while he's with his members of his own household and his relatives, is not like how he speaks, b'moshe v'melach, in front of a king, while he's sitting in front of a king. How you behave in front of a king is very different. How you behave in front of very important people is very, very different. When you think about the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is melo kol ha'aretz, right? He fills the entire world. Omid Olav is standing over him, v'roah b'masov, and is seeing his actions. Knowing that Hashem is with us, the melech, melechim, melochim, the king of kings is here with us right this second. Is listening to us, is watching us, is observing us. The Melech, he sees everything, he knows everything, he's aware of everything. Living with the Melech means that my private life is governed by the Torah. And that's what he says. The private life, or the Sefer Torah, which one Sefer Torah, the Gemara, I forgot to mention, the Gemara says, one Sefer is for the base Gnozov, is for his treasury. For his treasury, that's for the king back then, for his treasury, and the other Sefer Torah to go out with and to bring in with. And again, for us, one Sefer Torah is for our private life, and one Sefer Torah is for our public life. It's living a holistic life, living life according to Torah in every aspect of our life. That's one pshat he gives. The second pshat he gives is that's public versus private. Another way of looking at it is we have a more of an inner, unique life and a outer, more generic life. Now, what this means, he says, is that you know, we're all unique. We're all unique. Like they say that the 600,000 the neshamas of Klal Yisrael correspond to the 600,000 letters in the Sefer Torah. Such a concept, but every single neshama, we're all unique. Every one of us has a unique experience, a unique identity, and our unique identity correlates with the Torah itself. And this is something we've spoken about before. That everyone has a unique understanding, a unique relationship to the Torah. Now, this could lead us astray a little bit, because this could really open the door to whatever you want to interpret the Torah to mean. We'll come to that in a second. But we all have a unique relationship to Torah. How I learn a pasuk may be slightly different to how you learn a pasuk, in the sense of how it strikes you and what it means to you. And there's certain psukim, there's certain passages, certain pieces which have speak to you, but they don't speak to me as much. And they speak, and this one speaks to me, but this one that doesn't speak to you. We all have a unique chalek in the Torah. Our neshama is connected to the Torah, just like there are 600,000 neshamas, there are 600,000 letters in the Torah, but representing the idea of six of different dimensions, different colors, and different personalities, all relating to Torah differently. And it's important, and it's incumbent upon us to find our unique and to connect to our unique place in the Torah, such that if it says a person should only learn what he really desires to learn. You really should learn everything, but in terms of focusing and really and becoming animated and moved by one part of Torah, choose an area of Torah which really picks you up, which elevates you, which speaks to you personally. That's having and also having interpretations. And I say this with a lot of caution, because you have to follow the rules of interpretation. It's not a free-for-all, just interpret the Torah you wanted to interpret it. But if you see a chiddush in a pasuk, if you see a particular knach, as they say, a particular nuance in a verse, that you see, oh, that means that, that's good, that's fine, that's chidushei Torah, that's the concept of novelai in Torah, that we're encouraged to do, and we're encouraged to be able to find our unique and write up and to write down our unique understandings. But that's with the backdrop, not backdrop, but in partnership with the second Sefer Torah. So the first one is your private inner, as he says, the base ganaz of the Sefer Torah for your treasury, the hidden part of you, of who you are, aligning with your tafkid, aligning with your purpose in life. But the second Sefer Torah is making sure that you have the Shulchan Aruch in place, you have the Halacha in place. Don't interpret the Torah to the expense of the Shulchan Aruch, the second Sefer Torah. Don't only focus on one Sefer Torah and neglect the second Sefer Torah, because the second Sefer Torah is the Sefer Torah Klali, is the generic, general, common Sefer Torah, Hanegei L'chol Klal Yisrael, which relates to everybody. We're all obligated. We're all responsible. The same Shulchan Aruch applies to you as applies to me, as applies to him, as applies to her. The Shulchan Aruch is the guiding Sefer Torah of everyone, generic, across the board for everyone. With that, you can now engage in the second Sefer Torah of your unique relationship to Torah, in line with your unique tafkid, your unique purpose, your unique role, your unique identity. And the two go together. That's the wholesome experience of being Jewish. So we got two holistic programs. Holistic program number one is live Torah privately, live Torah publicly. Holistic program number two, live Torah according to your unique identity, connect to Torah according to your unique identity, but not at the expense of the generic Sefer Torah, which is applicable to everybody. That's the double Sefer Torah. That's the Mishnah Torah. That's what a king is supposed to have. So a king back then had, you know, physical Sifrei Torah. We have conceptual Mishnah Torah in our lives, because we want to be kings. We want to be a king. We want to be in control. Just like a king then was a king who led the people spiritually and was the pioneer for the Torah, so we are a king in our own lives, to be a pioneer, to lead us ourselves with Torah in the ways of Hashem. That's what being a king for ourselves is. We need the two Sefer Torah, the inner Sefer Torah, the private Sefer Torah, the public Sefer Torah, the generic Sefer Torah. That's the two Sefer Torahs. He ends off with a piece over here, because there's one very, very important condition with all of this, because this is learning Torah. It's really an advertisement for learning Torah. To become a melech, we've got to learn Torah. But the pasuk says, Karabo kol yomei chayov. Learn it all the days of your life. All the days of your life. So he says, there's one big condition over here, and that is to make sure we learn it properly. We've got to learn it properly. To be affected, we have to learn it properly. The Gemara says in Brachos, a very famous Gemara, it says that if a person experiences suffering, tragedy, God forbid, any type of difficult experience, the Gemara gives a formula and gives an instruction that if a person experiences any kind of suffering, then the first approach to it, the first approach to it is, Amar Rava, Rava said, some say it was Rav Chista, Im roa adam shisrim boyin olav. If a person sees that suffering comes upon him, yefash beish b'masav, a person should first think about, what have I done? Are there any things in my life which needs to be fixed? Introspect. Yefash beish b'masav, a person should introspect upon himself that maybe this behavior is causing this. Then it says, pish beish, if a person investigated and did a self-analysis, v'lemotza, couldn't find anything wrong with himself, Yitlib bitl Torah, he should attribute it to the neglect of Torah. He should attribute his suffering to the neglect of Torah. That's what the Gemara says. But the question is, a very famous question. I don't understand, like, if he's guilty of neglect of Torah, so then that's a sin, that's a mistake. So why wouldn't he have found that on his first round of introspection? Right? It says, you know, if your suffering comes, introspect. To see if there's anything wrong with you that's causing, is triggering this suffering. If you can't find anything, then attribute it to Bittul Torah. Well, that's I should have discovered that in the first round of my introspection. So one of the Teferis Shlomo says that what it means is that because Torah reveals what we're doing wrong. The reason why we don't see what's wrong with ourselves, the reason why we're not cognizant, and it's not just a matter of not seeing what was wrong with ourselves, it's being aware and cognizant and moved by our errors and our shortcomings and our things we need to improve. The reason why we just exonerate ourselves and we don't see what's really needs to be fixed is because we haven't really absorbed the Torah properly. We've neglected the Torah. Learning Torah is not simply about just reading and learning and studying and academically intellectualizing about Torah. It's really absorbing the message of Torah. And when a person learns in a way which is not about change and about growing and about transforming of oneself, and the way we're learning is more like just to kind of entertain ourselves intellectually and to appreciate the, you know, the intellectual academic dimension of Torah, it's not going to awaken us to realize and to recognize what we need to change in. So I could read, I mean, it's amazing. You could read halacha, you could read a mitzvah, you could read about this, you could read about kashrus, you could read about Shabbos, you could read about Yom Tov, you could read about tefillin, you could read about every mitzvah and learn about it. And it doesn't seem to, and then we ask ourselves, you know, what needs to be improved? And we're blind, it just like flies right over our head. The reason is because the learning itself has to be a learning of Kedusha, has to be a learning of connection, a learning of holiness, a learning of connection to Hashem. And then when a person learns in that fashion, then we realize, oh, this is what I need to improve upon. I need to kind of fix this. I can't live with this anymore. I need to fix it. So that's what it means. When a person sees that something is not so good happening in their life, they should mefash beish b'masav, they should investigate their behavior. If they can't find something wrong, attribute the fact that they can't find anything wrong with themselves because they're not learning properly. They're not learning the mitzvahs properly. They're not learning the halacha. They're not learning the Torah properly. So it really requires the proper approach to learning. So when it says in the pasuk, to be a melech, again, to summarize this, to be a true melech, we've got to turn away from all of the negative things which give us ego, which give us desire, which give us a sense of power and other things. That's a negative, sur meira. But also have two Sifrei Torah with us, a Sefer Torah which is governing our private lives and teaching us about our personal mission in life, and a Sefer Torah for our public lives, our interaction with other people, and the generic Sefer Torah which makes sure we keep in check with the halacha, we don't violate the halacha in any way. That has to be read. The Sifrei Torah has to be read every single day for all of a person's life, but the only way it's going to really impact us is only if we learn it properly. When we learn it properly with Kedusha, with sanctity, with holiness, then we'll see the things we need to improve upon. And he says, when the Pasuk says, Karabo kol yomei chayov, read it all the days of your life, he teaches it, he translates, he says, Karabo, read it, read in it all the days of your life. because when we learn Torah properly, we'll read within the Torah all the days of our lives, meaning we'll see our lives with a proper perspective of what needs to be changed, what needs to be fixed. So we have to read within the Torah and see all the days of our lives inside the Torah. See my life inside the Torah and to see, how am I living my life? Am I living my life according to this? Or am I living my life not in according to this? That's true learning. The true learning of Torah requires me to truly measure up my life to what I'm reading, to what I'm learning, and see, is it synchronized with it? Is it not synchronized with it? Is it connected? Is it not connected? And that's the message. So to be a melech, again, got to turn away from the negative stuff and to only to have two Sifrei Torah, to learn the Sifrei Torah, to learn those two conceptual Sifrei Torah properly with Kedusha, with sanctity, with the desire to grow. And this way will be a melech. And it's so appropriate in this month of Malchus. This is the month leading up to Malchus, because by us being a melech in our life, we'll be able to have Hashem as a melech in our own life as well. When I say melech in my own life, it means a melech on myself. And then Hashem will be my melech. Hashem will be zocha to have Hashem as being the melech also. And then ultimately the melech Mashiach will come as well. All of these things will come together. So we should be zocha to have rulership on our lives, on the edicts of Torah, being connected to it, being moved by it, so that we should embrace Hashem as being the melech, and we should greet Melech HaMashiach very quickly.